Welcome to our podcast. Here's Melissa,
Laura,
and Rob.
Hello, welcome to today's podcast. And I have to say something. Good morning, Lamont. So apparently his alarm is set up that when the alarm took off.
Goes off.
Okay, when the alarm goes off, it just goes to our podcast. So, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Lamont. Yo, that's so awesome.
Perfect.
Now, don't get up and get it right to getting to this do stuff. You should lie there for the next like 30, 40 minutes and hang out with us.
That's right. But first, let's bless this cacao that's sitting in front of us. So, for those of you who are partaking in cacao with us this morning, go ahead and place that beautiful cup of cacao to your heart. Take a deep breath in. And then let's offer our gratitude to this beautiful plant for allowing us this moment to commune with it. Give gratitude to the people that harvested the cacao, that brought the cacao to us and processed it. Give gratitude to Pachamama for giving us all the things that we need in our daily lives to thrive and grow and be abundant. So I thank this cacao for opening my heart as well, allowing us to feel the love, the compassion, the joy for the people around us, for all the things in our lives. Thank you so much for allowing us to open up our hearts at this moment. Aho.
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 All right. So Melissa just burned her hands making this cacao. This hot cacao like spilled on her hand. So we're sending extra love and healing to Melissa so that her hand gets better. Right now her hand is soaking in some aloe. And hopefully that will help as well.
Power of plants.
More good plant medicine. If you don't have an aloe plant, get one. But careful though, they spread. Thing will grow wild and take over everything.
Yeah. Well, right now, the aloe plant is actually flowering. And it's really, really beautiful when it flowers. Or starts to flower. So it, I think it's one of the prettiest plants also that you can have in your household.
Nice.
So is that what we're talking about today?
Aloe? No.
Different forms of plant medicines?
No.
No, natural remedies or...
We could. That could be a whole nother podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's not that far away because we want to talk about what it means or what will be the path to be a facilitator.
Yes.
As many, there is a quite good amount of people that after participating a ceremony, they feel that it's something that they would like to do, or at least they're curious about what is the path.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also something that is very new, of course, not that new, but it's becoming more mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So we can also say as a sort of new profession, if you want to call it that way. And so we want to bring some clarity into this.
Yeah, I agree, because I've gotten several people who have asked me, you know, in my integration groups and just pulled me aside after ceremony, just asking, hey, how do I get into being a facilitator? What do I need to do to do that? How long did that take you? And, the answer is really different for every person. I think if you went and asked each facilitator that you've run into how they became a facilitator, the answer might be different, but I think it all starts off with the same response. It took many years. It takes time and dedication to working with this plant, specifically ayahuasca. I mean, that it's not something that, and it, for other plant medicines, it might not be the same, but at least for ayahuasca, it does take a lot of dedication and time and energy to to become a facilitator, to even it's more than just sitting there, you know, holding space. If anyone can hold space in a ceremony, and that's true, and that's why people can come and volunteer and be perfectly fine holding space. But to go to that next level, I think, is what it really requires a lot of dedication.
Yeah, and when you say anyone can come and hold space, you mean mostly just, in this case, as a volunteer, be able to sit and just try to be neutral as possible.
Right.
Just sit and make sure that to provide, you know, paper towel or like all these simple things.
Right.
Because we use also holding space as facilitator. So holding space has many layers.
Right.
Of doing it. It's an art.
Right. And I think itself. That's like the first step, right? If someone wants to work with this medicine and become a facilitator, first and foremost is, well, you need to know how to hold space and do it properly and be able to do it in a way that is safe for the guests and consistently be able to do it. So that would, I think, be the first sort of requirement is you, when you want to be a facilitator, is, well, you've got to want to be able to hold space and do it properly. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd like to rewind and maybe even go back before you get to that step. And I just want people to understand that if this is something that you are very interested in and you're looking to get into this, you know, work in this space, you need to know that it is a terrible way to make money. I've spent most of my life dedicated to making money. I've worked for startups. I've owned businesses. I've worked for Fortune 500 companies. I've been in sales and business development in all of them. And if I take my entire life's history and look back, this is the worst money-making enterprise I've been involved with. So you really, really, really need to love doing the work. And you're probably going to need to have a job doing something else. This is, you know, work that comes from the heart. You know, Laura mentioned, and Melissa was talking about volunteering. You know, there's opportunities to volunteer and get involved in this space. You know, and that's something that we all did for a long time. And so, you know, just, you know, make sure that you're getting into it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And making a couple bucks on the side and having some fun, you know, doing it is a terrible idea.
Yeah, and I think also let's go so another step back. So it's true that many people maybe do one retreat and then go volunteer, but then this path is continue working yourself with the medicine. So investing first and foremost in your own growth and healing with that particular plant medicine. And here, all of us, we're talking about mostly ayahuasca because that's the experience we have. And it's important to say because, again, each plant medicine will require a certain knowledge and a little bit of a different path, but definitely knowing the plant, the medicine deeply is number one for all of them. And then we were talking before is like using an analogy of a medical field to understand better what are all the different roles in a ceremony, in serving medicine, right? We may understand that better if we use that analogy. Is we all have pretty much understanding of the different roles in medical field, while the medicine space is something that is very new for the West. Of course not for the traditions, but for the West. So that's what we are trying to explain, and it's becoming more mainstream, so it's important to bring this knowledge. So we see in the medical field, there's different roles, right? You have paramedics, You have nurses. You also have volunteers at the emergency room, at mm-hmm. least in Italy. I don't know here. Mm-hmm. And then you have people that drive the ambulance. And then you have doctors, family doctors, experts in a particular field. And then you have a surgeon, and so on and so on. So it's like an intricacy of different roles in the medicine field.
Right.
And the same we can see in for plant medicine, right? You have people that study more with this plant or this other plant, this tradition or this other tradition. Mm-hmm. And then again, you have volunteers, you have maybe assistant to facilitators, and then you have people that lead ceremonies and so on. Mm-hmm. So there's different roles, integration coach. And also if you want to set a whole ceremony, you will have to have someone coordinating, someone doing the check-in and so on. There's so many roles
right.
in putting up a retreat or a ceremonies that people can be called to, and not necessarily on the facilitator.
Right, right. And I think it people need to understand that there's a different level of dedication with each of those roles, mm-hmm. right? So if you're going to be a volunteer, you're going to have a different level of dedication versus someone who is a facilitator, versus someone who's an integration coach, versus someone who is a ceremony leader, right? And so each level has a certain level of dedication that you're going to need to devote your time and your energy, money perhaps, to learning and working with ayahuasca. And so when people when they look at a ceremony and they say, oh yeah, being a facilitator would be absolutely wonderful. Well, I agree. I absolutely love being a facilitator. But let's take that back and say, well, are you ready to do, you know, are you really understanding the dedication that you're going to need to do in order to become one? So it's really like, hey, people are like, hey, I would really love to be a surgeon and do all that. Well, okay, mm-hmm. Wonderful. But you do realize they go to school for 8 years, and then they do residency for another 4 years, and then they have to do a practicum, and then they specialize. And so there's a lot that goes into it. You can't just say, oh, yeah, I want to be a surgeon. It's the same way with I want to lead ceremony or I want to be a facilitator. There's just so much that can go into it. So, mm-hmm.
yeah. Melissa said something that was really important to me, and I just wanted to go back to it real quick. And it was in reference to taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have your house in order, you should not be helping other people get their house in order. You know, that would be like, you know, going to a dietitian who lives a sedentary lifestyle, is addicted to junk food, and weighs 400 pounds. Just not a smart thing to do. And you need to have enough experience in that medicine that you've done a lot of work on yourself and you've cleared out a lot of that trauma. Because when you go into ceremony as a facilitator, you know, you're not journeying inward, you're journeying outward with all the participants in the ceremony with you. So it's a very different experience, and you can't be distracted with that inward work that you may not have done or cleared out or you know, are just inexperienced and don't know what to do in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, before getting into the, you know, do's and don'ts of what you do in ceremony, just, you know, get into this line of work for the right reasons and make sure that, you know, you are in the safest space that you can be when these people trust you with whatever work they're going to need to be doing in ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you make up a good point, because, you know, if you don't have your house in order, so to speak, if you haven't, you know, really worked on yourself, done some shadow work, done some healing. If you haven't done that for yourself, when you go into working with ayahuasca, well, she's going to bring up a whole bunch of stuff for you to work on. And if you don't have that that stuff already worked on, it makes it very difficult in ceremony to pay attention to the guests when she's trying to teach you lessons and try and give you understandings about certain mm-hmm. things. So it's really much more difficult. If you do, however, do that work, then it's, you know, yes, she can still do that, but it's not as often. Mm-hmm. She really knows that you're there for the guest, so she can direct you, and it becomes an easier process.
You know, and another important part or an aspect of that is, you know, when you are in there doing the work and you are in your journey and you are, you know, I mean, we all have, you know, tough experiences and you're going through it, and there's a lot of different types of experiences. It is really valuable to have been in that space of fear when you have a guest who is dealing with issues because they're in a space of fear. So all of those different things that can come out in ceremony, you want to experience. So you need to do your work. You need to do your homework. You need to be prepared for whatever is going to come through those gates, you know, when that ceremony opens, because you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, relating to all this, I think what happens, it's a couple phenomenon after coming to one or a couple of ceremonies, and people have this amazing, great, life-changing experience. And so they're like, I want everyone to have those. How can I help everyone? And then the second thought could be, oh, like, how cool would that be to be a facilitator and that be my job, and be in this amazing experience all the time? And that is, so I call it a honeymoon phase, which is something that we can have with any great experience in life. Right, it's very common as human to try something that is amazing, and it's a honeymoon phase, and we want everyone to try it, and it just, we just do not have a reality check yet, and it's just everything great. And that's why when we created the training, the church we were working before, and now I'm creating another training with another church, I want for people to have been worked with the medicine, just themselves. Also volunteer is fine, but just volunteer and work with the medicine, not even start any training to do anything else for at least 1 year. And that's because, so we're sure you're out of the honeymoon phase. And that's nothing wrong being a honeymoon phase, but it's just like after a period of time, which is about 6 months or a little bit more, then there is a reality check, and you see you're not just seeing everything as super shining and beautiful. You see also, you start understanding how much more work is required. And so you can really see if that is something that is for you or not.
Right.
So you are in the honeymoon phase and there's this just enthusiasm. It just looks as for you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I can give a little personal example from outside the medicine space. It was when I started dancing salsa, and I'm still dancing salsa, by the way. But at first, I had this honeymoon phase, and I was like, how cool would it be to work as a salsa dancer? And I actually also had the opportunity to do a couple of time, and that was not for me to work as a salsa dancer. Mm-hmm. But it still is my passion. For example, I'm still doing classes, but that was not my work. But, you know, after the honeymoon phase, I was able to see that was not for me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, a great example of that is so many people, they come to the medicine, and, of course, they have to do the dieta before they come to sit with Mother Ayahuasca. And they have a very hard time with the dieta. And it's really, really difficult. And it was, one of the hardest things they could do is change their diet. And they couldn't wait to go back to eating the way they wanted to eat. Mm-hmm. But as a facilitator, you know, we're constantly eating the dieta in varying degrees. And obviously, depending on how often you facilitate. But for us, it comes very naturally and easily now to eat the dieta. But you know, if that's a game changer for you, then a facilitation is probably not a good idea. So it's really just trying to sit with yourself after that honeymoon phase and saying, all right, can I really make these changes in my life? Are these some things that I really want to dedicate, you know, time and energy to? or is this not something I'm going to be able to do? Am I really not good with dietas? Could I not even do the dieta properly, you know, for when I drank, much less am I going to be able to do it every weekend or every other weekend or what have you? So it's just want something like people need to consider, I think, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. I want to give an update on the cacao. It is delicious. My cup is big. I'm almost not quite halfway through it, but there's some spice to it, man. I feel a little beating up on the brow, maybe. I might need to go grab a tissue. Yeah.
It's the cayenne.
Yeah, there's kind of cayenne in there. It's definitely, you got turmeric in here?
Yes, I put the golden milk.
Mm. Yeah. Yum.
Yeah, there's also, I think, black pepper. Which adds the spicy.
Black pepper.
Yeah, and the black pepper actually helps with the turmeric, with the body to work with the turmeric properly, mm-hmm. or fully, I should say, not properly.
Looks good.
Yeah.
I hope everyone's enjoying theirs.
Yeah. So another thing effect that happens is the Dunning-Kruger effect.
What is it called?
Dunning-Kruger, those are last names.
Yeah, the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Okay.
You don't know about that?
I did not know about that.
Melissa, please enlighten us.
It's like they were two sociologists and they did this experiment, and it's just like people that have low performance or low skills on something may think that they have a higher skill and they cannot really evaluate themselves because they don't know. In short, it's like they don't know, they don't know, they don't know, they don't know.
They don't know what they don't know.
The unknown unknowns. They always get you.
But what happened is like they overestimate their skill levels.
Uh-huh.
They fail to recognize the genuine skill and expertise of other people and fail to recognize their own mistakes and lack of skill.
Mm.
And that can happen. We all may fall into that in some area.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly happen when it's something new, when there's a new topic, there's something new. And this is my also taking on that, building on this idea. When there is a new topic, so we start knowing a little bit of that, and there is almost a belief that, oh, we got it all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, we got all, like we did something one time. Okay, I got it. It's easy. I got it all. And I think it happens. To my experience, I feel it happens so because there's so much knowledge on earth. So your brain needs to evaluate quickly. This is something I want to keep learning or not. This is something for me or not. And I think that's why this happens in our brain, that we immediately, oh, I think I got all of this. But if we understand that it's just our brain to identify something I want to go take more time and study or not, it's one thing. The other thing is generally what they explain is that then people really believe they know it all. They got all the skills.
Yes, I've met a lot of people like that.
And then
yep.
And then they cannot even evaluate their own skills. Mm-hmm. They cannot either evaluate the lacks they have, and they cannot evaluate the others. And then the opposite are experts that are sort of imposter syndrome, that despite they actually really are experts into something, but because they're experts, they know how much
they don't know.
They don't know,
yeah.
And how much more is to know, and how much more depth is that topic. So that they underestimate themselves and their knowledge. So I'm just saying that because there are, you know, like, especially I think in facilitating, that can happen even easier because you go on a journey, it's amazing, and then you're like, oh, well, those people were just sitting on an altar and there was a playlist. Oh, how easy is that?
Oh, I can do that. No
yeah,
problem.
Everybody can so do easy. That. Yeah, because they were lucky that during the ceremony, nothing maybe happened that needed external intervention because what everything that we're doing in this space cannot really be seen mm-hmm. also.
Yeah, it's really funny because from the outside observer, you know, yeah, they might not realize just what goes into being a facilitator, you know, from that, you know, they might just look at it and say, oh, they're sitting there, and they get to just to sit there. And then if, you know, and they just might think, oh, how easy is that? I could totally do that. But really, if someone asks you, what are we doing when we're sitting there? It's, we're not just sitting there just to space off and think about what our lunch was today and, oh, what I should be doing at home and, oh, I forgot to pay this bill. No, it's, you know, we're literally focusing all of our energy onto the, into the space, watching the energy in the space, and then managing the energy in the space, which is actually the most difficult part, is not only identifying what's happening within the space. Is the energy kind of crazy? Is it chaotic? Is it, do you feel like some high vibration? Do you feel some low vibration? Like, what is going on in the space? And then being able to then clear it. Because mm-hmm. the idea is you want to keep a very high vibration within the space throughout the ceremony for the participants. And so if, you know, it looks like someone's just sitting there, well, no, that's, they're really not. They're actually looking at what's happening in the space and then how can they help the space. That's what's actually happening more than anything. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So then I'll ask a question. So what, for both of you, what do you find it was the hardest thing in becoming a facilitator? Hmm. And then what did you find as the most rewarding thing? I know.
Hardest thing and the most rewarding thing. Mm-hmm. Well, the most rewarding is really easy. It's the connection with the other participants in the ceremony. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's 100% the reason why I do it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardest thing, I'm not sure if I knew it was hard at the time, but looking back, what I think was a key kind of transition point was going from, okay, can I functionally work and do what I need to do in this space while I'm in the medicine?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is the mentality I guess I first had when I went into, you know, being the guardian position in the program and then into facilitation, and then transitioning from there into, you know, actively working in the space with the medicine and not being, you know, physically in it necessarily, but managing the energy, managing the space, you know, being involved in the participants' journeys, you know, while you're sitting on the altar as opposed to going over and visiting them. So that transition, I think, was, you know, the difference in the way I see working in the medicine now is nothing like what I thought it was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many, like, layers and layers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say for me, I'll have to separate between before facilitating, before training in the jungle, and also after training in the jungle.
Because you've had exactly. So you've taken it one step further again, you know, in your training and gone even more and done more with the medicine than even Rob and I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely I would like to add, you know, like the training that I did in the jungle or the training I did before. So that's definitely one important way is, yes, you train like sort of theoretical knowledge if you want. Mm-hmm. But then practice is so important.
Yeah.
That's with practice that you can slowly fill the space. Mm-hmm. So maybe one thing that was that I can see as a consistent in both role, in a sense, that can be more than a challenge, but that keep learning and learning each time, is really to separate and distinguish what is that I feel and what is the space feel, what that I think, mm-hmm. and what is the space thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, you really need practice for that. And
yeah,
I see,
I think that's what I was trying to articulate before so clumsily, but yeah.
Because, like, you know, like, and we see also many people like, I feel the space. I'm like, are you really sure is the space or is you?
Mm-hmm.
Or the other way around?
Right.
when you have a thought of like, especially the more you practice and the more you are listening to everyone's thoughts, like 100%. And I was saying that the other day with Laura, like when I was a guardian, when I was a facilitator with a playlist, I could have the time to ask, where is this thought coming from?
Right.
Now that I have to sing Ikora, I cannot ask. So I just have all these thoughts coming in, boom, 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 boom. I can ask where they come from. And sometimes it's interesting how the mind read the thought and can totally, like, your mind then say why you're thinking that.
Right.
Like, for example, an easy example, you probably heard that thought many times. When is this going to be over?
Yeah.
And you're like, why am I thinking that? It's not you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's definitely not you. So, like, really be able, with practice, that you distinguish when it's you and when it's others.
Exactly.
You know, you bring up a good existential question. When your mind asks you why it's thinking something. My brain's not going to function for a while.
Because
you're on ayahuasca.
I know. And that was because you're still, like, even when you facilitate, you definitely may have some thoughts.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, that was something I was unaware of when I was facilitating. And I can remember exactly where I was when this happened. I'm sitting there and all of a sudden this overwhelming feeling of like, I do not want to be here. I want to leave. I want to go home. And I just stopped for a second and I thought, this is so weird because this is literally what I love to do. I spend weekend and then I go home and I do my laundry and pack my bag on Sunday, you know, waiting for the next weekend because I love it so much. And I'm sitting here dreading peeing here. And I just thought it was very interesting. And then as actually you, Melissa, who brought up probably months later that, you know, I'm like, oh my God, that wasn't my thought. The person who was lying there next to me was having a miserable time. So absolutely, they totally didn't want to be there.
Yeah, I think I probably start learning that because it's rapé. Mm-hmm. Because like I would, or maybe mapacha, I don't know, I will hear rapé. And I was like, well, I'm thinking of rapé. And sure enough, somebody will raise their hand and ask for rapé.
Yeah.
So that's when I start noticing. It's like,
And the
so
question
never
is,
assume it's my thought. Always ask.
Did you, now are you thinking that you thought rapé and they were like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. So they raised their hand or they said in their mind, boy, I'd like some rapé. And you were like, oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's more that.
The latter.
Okay.
Yeah. The latter. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And also that just for the one who are listening, and they never facilitate before, that's something that it develops while you are in that role. And the medicine knows, she always knows what mm-hmm. you're doing, and that is your role. And so she will, you're in charge. So she's giving you that. So you're in charge, you listen to the thoughts. You need to know what's going on in
exactly.
the space. So it's not that when you go, you do your own work, you have a thought, and it's like, oh, who's thinking that? Maybe if you're sensitive, but generally, it's really you're working on yourself.
Exactly.
It's really your thought.
More than likely, it's your thought. But that is one of the, I guess, challenges as you're working with the medicine, working towards being a facilitator, or, you know, in the early stages of being a facilitator, is working with that dose so you can get in that right space first, where you're actually able to facilitate and not go on a mat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that fine line. I call it the sweet spot where, you know, if I take too much, I'm on a mat. If I take just the right amount, then I'm perfectly tuned in. If I don't take enough, then I'm just too much in my own thoughts. And I just, you know, I'm now not actually doing my job.
Not in the medicine.
Yeah. I'm not really in the medicine.
Yeah. I'm not
so for me, there's a fine line there, a sweet spot. That was challenging for me in the beginning to figure out what my sweet spot was. And then, you know, once I've figured out what my sweet spot is and what that felt like, then it's, okay, now let's pay attention to the space and what I need to do for the space. And that was challenging, trying to figure out, to be able to tune in and receive the information, because Mother Ayahuasca gives you that information. She very much teaches us, trains us, through sometimes situations, through like feelings. For me, it's through feelings, but or mm-hmm. my emotions and actual physical feelings. Mm-hmm. But learning from her, right, and being able to be open to learn from her in that space, and because she's going to try and teach you whether you are ready or not, like mentally ready or not. She's going to try and teach you because you're taking the medicine as a facilitator. So I found that challenging as well. And so it's, but at the same time, rewarding, right? Because as you go through the process and over the years, when you get to that space, you're like, oh, wow, I've really come a long way. And it's very rewarding mm-hmm. to be able to work with this plant spirit who is just so beautiful and so giving. And it's quite an honor to be able to do this kind of work when you actually can dedicate the time and the energy to do so mm-hmm. properly.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming back to, I think, the beginning, what we're talking about, so what it takes. So it's, as you said, dedication, work on yourself first. Mm-hmm. First is work on yourself. Wait to be out of the honeymoon phase. At the same time, you can volunteer, work on yourself. And then definitely training to be a facilitator. And then if you feel called to do more and lead a ceremony, definitely necessary to pick a tradition from the jungle and, mm-hmm. and work and train with that tradition. But also we want to share that we saw in the training, so many people, like more than 50% drop off the training.
Yeah, because it's so difficult. Right.
It's either, you know, it can be difficult, but I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with what Melissa brought up with the honeymoon phase is over. And now it's just the daily grind of, you know, doing it. And mm-hmm. if you're not fascinated by it and enthralled by, you know, the prospect of sitting in ceremony and can't wait for the next time, then, you know, maybe you're forcing it.
And there's also so much responsibility.
Yes.
It's such a strong responsibility. Mm-hmm. You need to be ready to take that responsibility.
Yeah, it's a huge responsibility. And I mean, I'm grateful that we had the opportunity to sit in so many ceremonies. I mean, we sat in hundreds of ceremonies at this point.
Mm-hmm. Thousands of people.
Right? Thousands of people. And so we've really gotten that, quite frankly, a unique experience as mm-hmm. facilitators, because we have been able to see a lot of different types of ceremonies and things that can happen in a ceremony to people.
Yes.
And what, you know, if you don't have people who are experienced, who can help you, who do know what to do, it can go really, really bad. So that's where the training comes in. That's where, you know, having experience comes in. And the, like what you're saying with the practice, you know, being having that dedication to work with this medicine and practice with this medicine and really be diligent on learning what she's trying to teach us, learning the space, learning the energy, learning all the different facets. Mm-hmm. If you can do all that, then fabulous, go for it. But if that is not something that is on your bucket list and you just want to get the accolades of, oh, helping someone, then being a facilitator might not be for you.
there's a better way to do it.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to add something to your mm-hmm. list there, Laura. And it's that...
Okay, Rob.
when you're facilitating or leading a ceremony, there's nobody else but you.
Yes.
You're the one who is going mm-hmm. to be responsible. You're the person in the center. You're going to be, when shit goes sideways, everyone's looking at you. Mm-hmm. And you have to be prepared for that. Yeah. And when I say shit goes sideways, it could go all kind of ways. And yes. usually it does. And you need to be able to maintain that situation and be aware of the rest of the guests and your responsibilities yes. and liabilities and the safety of everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many things. So not to scare anybody off, but it's just a reality of the work that's being done.
You know, like I want to relate that we often use the metaphor of a ship, and I was going to c- connect that with our first episode, Picard, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because we're watching that again. So when you lead ceremony, you're Picard, you're the captain of mm-hmm. that ship. When you're facilitating, you know, you're there's all the different roles. Someone is at the helm, someone is your first officer, and then you're the captain. And each time you go from being the helm, being first officer, or be the captain, there's different responsibilities that you feel on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. I think each time I transitioned from one to the other, I had to go through my own personal work of feeling if I was ready for mm-hmm. that responsibility. Yeah. Because it is a very important responsibility. Mm-hmm. All the people in that ship are relying on you. And as you said, captain is the last one leaving the ship, mm-hmm. if anything. You really need to think always for what is the best for all the ship, not just for your own personal pleasure, because it's mm-hmm. it's fun in ceremony. No. It's all about the others. And it's not even because I want to help, because that's also, it ring a bell a little bit when it's someone like, want to help, I want to heal people, which is beautiful. But I think there is some personal work to be done there.
Yeah.
Because like, who do you really want to heal? There's always some part of you that still wants to heal. That's why you're so focused
on
the outside.
Yeah.
It's really a responsibility to be responsible for others, so that others that are in the ship, you're responsible for them 100%. And I think the analogy of the ship, it's really, mm-hmm. really a good one. It makes you understand what you're doing. And so that's why I want to add also in this path, you always, for me it's so important, always need to do your own work. Mm-hmm. Keep doing it, not just at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Keep doing it.
It's constant.
You have to do it at every level. And Melissa, yeah. like you said, when you do that self-reflection, there's self-doubt that creeps in. And that's mm-hmm. good. It's healthy. It makes you, you know, think about what you're doing and align your priorities. So at every level, you know, there's yeah. more work to be done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and
it's
again,
nonstop. And if you think you're done, I can guarantee you, you're not.
Yeah, avoid anyone who says they're the expert or that says they know everything about a certain mm-hmm. subject. Because
yeah.
the truth is, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know shit.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
No, we're all learning. We all are growing and healing. It's a nonstop, mm-hmm. never-ending process.
Yeah, and as I was saying, at each step of the way, there are things that open up that you need to process. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I have from guardian to facilitator, I have this new responsibility. Like as Rob was saying, okay, when I was a guardian, I could always call a facilitator. I had someone had my shoulders. Now it's on me.
Mm-hmm.
Can I fulfill that role? Do I feel ready? Do I feel this is a responsibility I want to take?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do I feel I want to take it? It's okay if you don't.
Right.
We
Absolutely.
Have to say, it's okay if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we had many drop-off. And I want to say, if you feel called to this path and you start, and then you realize that's not your path, wait, well, I would like to applaud you because you understand that it's not exactly your path. And look of what did you learn that will help you create your own path.
Mm-hmm.
There was something there for you to learn, to integrate into you, to incorporate, so that now you're going to create something that is you.
Yes.
You don't have to be the copy of anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Do not be a copy. Be you. So you maybe is learning to facilitate, and then, oh, but it's not facilitate. Ayahuasca is not for me. Maybe along the way you find that it's, I don't know, bufo. Or breath work,
right?
Or sound healing.
Mm-hmm.
I actually know of someone who was an apprentice with a shaman, and after 2 years, just decided that or realized that his path was breath work, and
yeah.
he's so successful in doing breath work. And apprentice with that shaman just really helped him to create his own thing. And fulfill
right.
his own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just so beautiful. So just know that that can be part of your path, but you don't know how it will end. So don't be a copy of anyone. Be you.
yeah,
explore you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah. If the path you're going down is well-worn, it ain't yours. Go hack through the jungle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, this whole, you know, they say life is a ceremony, right? And life mm-hmm. is a ceremony. And for us, you know, every experience that we have is really to teach us about ourselves and to bring us back to our true authentic self. And when we can honor that and understand and recognize, oh, this aligns with my true authentic self, this doesn't align with my true authentic self. And sometimes it takes, you know, time just to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But you're right. If you know, you go down this path of being a facilitator or holding ceremonies and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, this is not, I don't think this is what meant for me. That's good. It's a great realization. You know, kudos to you for realizing that, because mm-hmm. that is wonderful. And now it's time for you to recognize what is more in alignment with you. So sometimes life is really all about figuring out what's not in alignment so that you can open up more opportunities for what is.
Well, the bonus is if that does happen to you, well, you've become, you know, very in tune with yourself, cleared out a lot of shit, and are probably a better human being for it. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I've done my cacao.
Yeah, I know. I've done my cacao too. Oh, it was so good.
I'm almost done. I wanted to just add this last metaphor.
No, we're finished.
I'm like, go for it. You're like,
finished. Yeah, it's like, how about this of find your own path? You know, like in. How can you put together the fact that it's so important to learn, train, practice, but also be you and find mm-hmm. your own path? And so my father is a musician, so I thought, oh, like a musician will need to learn, train, practice, mm-hmm. practice and practice. And then definitely they will find their own way mm-hmm. of playing whatever is their music. Improvisation is the hardest things.
Right.
Because that means there's so much of knowledge, train, and practice.
Yeah.
And becoming you that goes into improvisation.
Right.
And so I think that's will be the closing analogy.
So on that note, I'm going to go listen to some Grateful Dead if anybody wants to listen to some improvisational kick-ass music.
Listen, I will watch Picard.
new episode hasn't launched yet.
Star Trek.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you have any thoughts about becoming a facilitator, if you are a facilitator and want to add on, or if you would just like to ask us any questions about being a facilitator, please let us know. We would love to hear from you. Cacao you later, people.
Cacao you later.
Cacao you later.
Clink, clink, dink, dink, what, what? Clink, clink, drink, right?